The call is now being recorded. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is a council call, and on the call we have Jeff Newman.
Present.
Ching Chao.
Present.
Jonathan Robinson.
Present.
Nathan Soul.
Here.
Joyce Kieran.
Here.
Walker Greiman.
Present.
Thomas Rickett.
Present.
Saeed Jamil.
Present.
And may I also mention that we have a proxy for Saeed Jamil, which will be carried by John Berard, in case Saeed has to go off the call for some business matters. John Berard?
I'm here.
Ryan Winterfeld?
Present.
Peter Rindfors?
Present.
Oswaldo Nova?
Present.
Wolf Ulrich Knoben?
Present.
Maria Farrell? Maria is in transit, but she will be on the call, and she has the proxy for Magali Pazello, who will not be, who is absent. Wendy Salsa?
Good morning.
David Cake?
Present.
And David Cake is carrying the proxy for Wolfgang Kleinwächter, who will not be able to be on the call. Norbert Klein?
Yes.
Norbert is the alternate, for the temporary alternate for Joy Lidicote, who is still on vacation. Lanri Ajayi?
Present.
Jennifer Wolf?
Yes, present.
Alan Greenberg?
Present.
Han-Chuan Lee? Absent. And for staff, we have David Olive, Marika Koenigs, Julie Headland, Rob Hogarth, Barbara Roseman, Brian Peck, Barry Cobb,
yes.
Lars Hoffman, Carlos Reyes, Eric Everard from our technical staff, Margie Malam, myself, Glenda Saint-Jury, and we have on the call with us Chris Despain from the ICANN board. And I see that Han-Chuan Lee has just joined the call. May I just remind people, please, to say their names before speaking for transcription purposes. And Jonathan, I think that's over to you. Thank you. Have I left anybody off? Thank you, Jonathan. Over to you.
Thank you, Glenn. Thanks. So welcome, everyone, and welcome especially to Chris. Good to have you here, Chris. Can I call now under item 1.2 for any updates to statements of interest, please?
Jonathan, this is Glenn. Just to note that Maria Farrell has updated her statement of interest.
Thank you, Glenn. I think we, under item 1.4, then note that the status of the minutes of the council, these were published in accordance with the council procedures. Are there any comments on that last set of minutes that anyone would like to make? Right, moving swiftly on then to item 2, which, as you know, I've been starting each meeting with a couple of opening remarks. I'm not going to take much of your time. Many of the themes remain the same. So, Glenn, if I could have that slide up and just highlight a couple of points, please. That's a good point. Did you receive a slide from me, Glenn?
No, I didn't, Jonathan.
All right, fine. Let me just talk through a couple of key points then, and I can always forward you a slide after the meeting. As you know, I've really focused on three key strategic points, really. Our effective internal working as a council, some of our key external relations, and our workload management. I was really encouraged by the work that we managed to do on what was essentially a contentious issue with the GAC letter. Whilst we didn't all agree, the tone was positive and constructive, and I think we produced a thorough piece of work. So hopefully we can take that same spirit into the work on the the straw man, which is challenging us, and some of the other items we've got to work on. I've continued, and I know other councillors have, to work on some of our key relations with respect to the GAC, the board, constituency and stakeholder group chairs, other SOs and ACs, and I will continue and encourage all of you to reach out to explain the council's function, which is not always as well understood as it could be, and the content of the work we are doing. And of course, we've in the interim had the meeting in Amsterdam with the staff, the council leadership, and we'll touch on that a little bit more later. And one of the key outcomes of that is a small but significant detail where we're running an ongoing action list, as you will have seen. Our project list, whilst comprehensive, is somewhat unwieldy, and so we've distilled down a shorter and more functional short-term action list, which we intend to update after each council call, circulate mid-month, and then recirculate ahead of the next council meeting. So I hope you'll find that helpful. Please pay attention to it. It's short. We'll try and keep it down to just one or two pages of key actions that have either been committed to by individual councillors or groups of the council, and to keep our work running effectively and smoothly. And as you know, all of this is really about trying to ensure that the council is both productive and effective and either is or becomes well respected for the work and the its throughput and quality of work. We won't rest on our laurels. Our focus on continuous improvement and the tone of you know, collaboration and consensus-oriented work, so that we produce output that reflects that. I've talked with some people about process and been reminded that you know, in many ways this is all about process. It's about following the operating rules and procedures, and that's what is a very essential component of the way in which the council works. But nevertheless, as we all know, at times process has been used for process's sake, and to that extent, whilst valuing the effective process, we've got to not ever indulge in process for its own sake. Got a number of challenging items to cover here. I think I'm not going to try and anticipate the agenda. We've all seen the agenda, and we'll work through it now and try and stick to time and work through it effectively. Touching for a moment on the action list then, as I said, we did complete our response to the GAC just in time according to our own deadline. We did the work on the ATRT, on the ATRT endorsements. We've had a communication from the selectors. I don't believe, and someone please feel free to correct me if I'm mistaken here, but I don't believe we've had a communication of who has actually been selected, rather a response to our endorsements. Peter, is there something that you'd like to say? Let me just, I see your hand is up, and make sure I come to you.
Yeah. Sorry, so that's the next. Point is not 0 minutes, so I just make a quick question on the status of the fake renewal notices drafting team, because I've got questions from other groups, and I could have found it on the list.
That is.
Maybe you can check it up and email.
It's a good question, and yeah, I don't have that at the tip of my tongue. Perhaps Marika, you can help me, or one of the staff on that. But yeah, okay, Petra, point taken, and we'll come back to that.
Thanks.
So where were we? Where this we've trying to think what other items are worth covering. Anyway, those of you you can refer to the action list. There are a number of items that are completed, but there's a couple of key open items, of obviously including our response to ICANN CEO on the straw man proposal, and the more recent board request for advice on second level protections, which we'll come to as a specific agenda item. So without further ado, I think we should go straight on to the consent agenda, to which you will notice. Oh, let me just pause a moment. Does anyone have any additional questions or comments on the action item list before we move on? Marika.
This is Marika. One open item that we still have as well is a liaison for the IRTP Part D working group. I sent an email about that as well to the council mailing list, and that group is expected to kick off shortly, so it would be helpful if someone would come forward as a liaison to that group.
Do we have someone who's immediately available, or failing that, if councillors could think about that and potentially make themselves available by volunteering on list? No immediate volunteers. Well, we'll chase that up on list and remind you again that we do need someone, and I may well have to reach out to one or more individuals to see if you're prepared to do that. Right, so there are a couple of items on the consent agenda, and just to remind you of the consent agenda, any council may reopen discussions on any of these items or at any point in the future, of course, but also object to them being on the consent agenda. But for the moment, the proposal is that we close off a couple of items off the project list, the outreach work on the outreach task force, and a RAP working group recommendation on cross-TLD registration scam. So I'll pause a moment to hear if there are any objections to those items being on the consent agenda and being removed from our project list at this stage. Alan.
Yeah, I don't have an objection to it. Are there actual formal motions that go along with this, which will be entered into the, you know, the log of GNSO decisions, though? I would have thought there would be. And maybe I'm missing something, but I didn't see a list of motions for this week.
There were no motions submitted. As far as I'm aware, the work is either complete or inactive at this stage, and so that's the reason for there's no active work going on, and it may well be that this needs to be checked as to whether these need to concluding by a motion, but I'm not aware of that. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. As these are not formal PDPs, our interpretation has been that by taking an action here, it will be recorded and in the minutes, and in that way the project will be officially closed. For example, on the RAP working group recommendation, there's not even actually a working group or anything active at the moment. That was just an item that was still on the list, but at this stage there's no further action foreseen, and same with the outreach task force. That work has been overtaken by the broader ICANN effort, it appears. So the proposal will be just to close those so they can be taken off the project list, which of course doesn't prevent anyone from any point in time putting or requesting additional work or new work on any of these topics in the future.
Jonathan, just for the record, I wasn't questioning the substance. I was just asking about the procedure. I would have assumed that things on the consent agenda, you know, if you use the model the board does, that it would have had a resolution. That was all I was asking, not about the substance.
All right, we'll think about that and come back to you then, Alan, on the process.
Don't need to come back, just raising the issue. Thank you.
Thanks. Right, moving on then to item four, which is for information and potentially some discussion. There have been two meetings that have taken place in the interim that I and we as the council leadership felt that it was worth spending a few minutes updating the council on. The first was a meeting that took place parallel, immediately prior to the regional meeting in Amsterdam of the registries and registrars, which was simply a convenient timing rather than in any way linked to that meeting, where myself, Wolf Ulrich, and Mason got together with the key policy staff. Now, I have the GNSO policy staff. I have sent you a briefing note on that, but I thought it would be an opportune time for Mason to give you an update on that. And then, in addition, the non-contracted parties have had what I believe is the first instance of a meeting of sort of intersessional meeting of the entire House, which was held in LA, and Wolf Ulrich is going to give an update on that. So, Mason, if I could hand over to you first, and then if you could say a few words about the Amsterdam meeting, and we can take any questions on that, and then we'll move on to Wolf Ulrich.
Sure. Good morning, everyone. I'll just give a brief overview. Lars Hoffman, the new one of the new folks on the policy staff, helpfully provided notes of the proceedings which took place for most of the day preceding the Amsterdam meeting. So I'll just run through a couple of notes very quickly. And before I do, I want to say thank you to David and Glenn and Marika and others on the policy staff, because it was a very helpful and productive session. So I want to say thank you for them taking a day to spend time with the council leadership. We met for the day. There was we initially had an input and update from the staff on the way that policy is currently organized and how staff support is put together to help the GNSO as well as other ICANN structures. The context of that discussion was on the policy staff's objective to help manage the policy process effectively. David Olive reported that there was a policy team planning session that took place in LA at the end of last year. The objective there being for staff to share some information and experiences with the idea of orienting policy work for 2013. I was happy to hear that both Fadi and Akram were able to participate in that session and get an overview of what the council is up to. We talked about operational management of the council. Staff had some input that it was their objective to move information and issues forward as efficiently as we could. We talked about the volunteer model and how there's this sort of natural dependency on work group volunteers to make sure that work goes forward on PDPs. Staff discussed their motivation to make sure that work is progressing as quickly as it could. Both staff and the leadership talked about how to improve the GNSO's workload management, which, as we all know, is sort of a perennial topic for the council. One area that we talked about was making sure that there was enough dialogue and information gathered before a request for an issues report was made. The idea there being that if there was sufficient information put together in advance of a PDP being initiated, then that could effectively reduce the amount of time that a PDP takes and lead to better policy in the end, because it would more information equals better and more informed actions on the part of the council, and hopefully better policy in the end. We talked about the fact that not every issue that comes in front of the GNSO is necessarily a PDP. We've had that experience over the course of the last several months. And then from this subject came a couple of action items. One was for leadership to take a look at ways that we can improve communication and interaction between the non-contracted party house and the contracted party house, so that different support organizations and advisory committees can, between the two houses and between the SOs and the ACs, to make sure that there's better understanding of mutual processes and we can, again, arrive at better policy. One item that arose out of that was exploring the possibility of organizing an intersessional meeting or some kind of special meeting of the council away from a regular ICANN meeting. And I know that's a time challenge, which we also talked about, but the potential benefit of that could be that we get away from sort of the ICANN fishbowl and the heavy time demands that are put on us during an ICANN meeting, and have a chance for some sustained and a little bit less formal dialogue with each other. Another action item was the idea of making the launch of issue reports more informed and effective. excuse me. And Marika's been working on improving the existing template that's in the PDP manual that and then put that on the website as a tool for us to be able to populate the initiation of an issues report with better data, again, so that we can have a more informed PDP process. A third action item that came out of that was to encourage council members who are proponents of a potential PDP to be a caretaker or a shepherd of that PDP as it makes its way through the council. That person would also be then paired with a member of the policy staff to make sure that there's enough support available if that's needed. So then we moved on to a discussion about improving work efficiency and how to more effectively onboard new council members. Staff very helpfully put together a number of draft modules that described in sort of a condensed way the various roles and obligations of council members, also working group chairs and members, and then lay out various council communications tools and PDP processes. So before they finalize those documents, I know that feedback from the council is going to be solicited by the staff, but that was a very helpful thing for them to provide. We also talked a bit about future needs for both staff and council members, maybe some self-designed training tools for new council members, things that would bring us up to speed on procedure and work items before the council. Also in the category of work efficiency, we talked about just some basic procedural moves like making sure the agenda of future meetings was made known to the council at least 2 weeks prior to the council meeting, so we had sufficient time to discuss the agenda with our respective stakeholder groups. We talked about communication strategy as well and how that could be made more effective, particularly as it relates to other SOs and ACs, and namely the GAC, with whom you know our relationship has been discussed on the council for some time now. We talked about how notes and outcomes of meetings could be provided to encourage feedback. We also talked about in the realm of communication strategy, again, a council workshop that could be done potentially offline as a way to improve both our internal communication with each other and then communication externally with others. I'm just scrolling through my notes. I'm almost finished here. We discussed workload management, which again is an ongoing concern of the council. We talked about why workload management always seems to be a problem. We identified a few issues, namely in the process that currently exists for the multi-stakeholder model, there's very little constraint of any kind to initiating policy work, and although there's some issues being discussed now, there's no natural termination of that except for the establishment of policy. So we talked about how to further improve that if structural changes are made. That includes better comprehensive representation on SOs and ACs and various GNSO working groups, making sure that they're aware of what the council is doing so that we avoid this last-minute concern over over policy establishment. We also discussed making sure that there's a concrete work plan and for council leadership to make sure that the project list is updated and the council is aware of work that's going on. And as chair and vice chairs, we committed to each other that there would be a regular review of our project list to make sure that items that are completed are taken off the list and that those who are responsible for moving items forward are reminded of deadlines and things of that nature. We talked about the meeting coming up in Beijing. There's obviously, planning has already started. I got myself in a position where now I'm responsible for organizing that work, and I know that a call has gone out for input on topics of interest and that kind of thing. So speaking in my own capacity, if you have topics of interest to discuss, particularly with the board, the GAC, the CNSO, that would be appreciated. Also, if there are particular issues that we want to hear from staff on during our weekend session, that would also be particularly helpful. Two other items. We talked about our relationship with the GAC. David Olive and the policy staff helpfully discussed with us their discussions with the GAC on GNSO activity and let us know that staff has provided to the GAC just a one-page PDP update that doesn't particularly contain any additional information that wouldn't be otherwise available to the GAC, but summarizes for them in a short digest way what the council is doing, so that the GAC can understand at an earlier level what the council's thinking is on policy development. And then there, the final discussion item was the concept of policy versus implementation. The draft paper that David put together that was circulated to the council in January was reviewed again. We all agreed that it was an important topic and that there would be ongoing discussions, particularly in Beijing. So, Jonathan, I'll turn that back over to you. I think that's everything from the notes from the discussion, but I'd be happy to answer any questions on that day's activity.
Thanks, Mason. That's a comprehensive review, and I see that John Barrett asked in the chat that elements of this, the action items or outcomes, be communicated. And I've responded that we can communicate that both via the list and or put them onto the action items to the extent that there's ongoing activity there.
Happy to do that.
A couple of other points. I mean, certainly two brief remarks on what you said. One is this, that we will come to this again later in our call, but this issue of how we produce policy advice outside of going down a full PDP route, I think, is something that's going to challenge the GNSO and the council. It's something we're going to have to work on, and it appears that there's a relatively regular requirement for some form of input on policy other than going down the full PDP route, and we need to look at how we might deal with that. So that's certainly an issue that would be useful to discuss with the council, not resolved necessarily now, but start to deal with. And you know, there's a particular item on the closed generic TLDs which is in that camp. The other is, you touched on this intersessional meeting. I just want to clarify that there were really two issues there. What happens is, if you'll recall, we elect a new council in Toronto, and it happens in this particular instance, Toronto's October, Beijing's April, and we then go into a series of telephone calls with a council who may not have had the opportunity to meet face-to-face and interact with one another. And that was really my key concern, I think, and the concern we were discussing. So it's as much about the council's elected right at the end of the meeting, and it may be that the councils haven't ever met one another face-to-face or had very little time together, and yet we expect of one another that we'll work closely and effectively together on some potentially contentious topics. And so that's really where some of the idea came from there. Let me not hog the microphone. Are there any questions or points people would might like to make in relation to the meeting that Mason's just described before we move over to hear from Wolf Ulrich on the meeting that took place in LA? Sounds like Mason did a good job of summing it up, since I'm not seeing any hands come up at the moment. I have just sent an email to the list confirming that Wolf Ulrich will be the vice chair of the council elected by the non-contracted party's house for the remainder of the current term. So we've had confirmation of that within the last day or two, and I apologize that hasn't come to the list sooner, but just in advance of Wolf Ulrich providing his update, I thought I should let you know that and obviously congratulate Wolf Ulrich in that respect. So fire away, Wolf Ulrich. Let's hear from you then on the non-contracted parties house intersessional meeting in LA.
Yes, thank you, Jonathan. It's Wolf Ulrich speaking. Well, this gives me the opportunity just to take it over. You bridged it very well to that topic. That I have been appointed as vice chair. That is one of the outcomes of the meeting in L.A. as well. And because there was, in the background, there was, have been several meetings and talks about that issue, which took a longer time since Toronto. And I was very happy that we came to a conclusion, and I have to thank everybody here in front of the council as well, from the non-competitive parties hall as well, that at the end we came to such an agreement and that we all can live with. So thank you very much. With regards to that, to other topics in the intersessional meeting, let me just come back to the intention of that meeting in LA, which was just a meeting between ICANN and the non-competitive parties house. So it was planned and it was requested a longer time ago, seeing to bridge the large gap between the Toronto and the Beijing meeting and to cover topics which are under development. Specifically, which was the first intention was, well, to have a specific eye on the stakeholder engagement and outreach. So in preparing that meeting, there was a team preparing together with ICANN staff the agenda. It turned at the end out that we covered a lot of topics which you know from other meetings and which were important enough to cover. But the format anyway was different to normal meetings, normal public meetings, ICANN meetings, in that way that both parts of the house, the commercial stakeholder group and the non-commercial stakeholder group, had the opportunity or were given the opportunity by Fadi to have separate meetings with him, around 90-minute meetings to go to have a tour d'horizon about specific issues the specific stakeholder groups are dealing with. So in this respect, I can only talk for the commercial stakeholder group. Maybe there it could be completed by somebody else from the another council meeting from the NCSG as so wished. We had with Fadi there was one of the interesting things was that he is he has on his agenda a series of so-called round tables with CEOs from the DNS industry, let me say it that way. And as you could see also from the ICANN public web page, there have been already two meetings with registrars and registries on that and high-level representatives of that industry. And as we understood, it is intended by Fadi that to make ICANN more visible and at high levels within the companies affiliated or dealing with the DNS and acting in the DNS sector. So this idea was also taken up from several parts of the CSG, and there shall be follow-up of other roundtables in another environment. With Fadi, there's one thing is planned in March in London, and others may follow as well. We also went through the another major item was okay, naturally policy versus implementation and the trademark clearinghouse issue. And as Fadi turned out, so came up, so he was open well to say with regard to the trademark clearinghouse that he formulated in that way that he may have underestimated the process which is required, he wouldn't say that he made a mistake with regard to the question of the trademark clearinghouse dealing with that, but with specifically related to the process. I think he also touched this point at your meetings you had with him in Amsterdam and maybe as well at the non-competitive parties house. So there could be an exchange of the different views about that. Then the question of how the policy development process is going to be developed or is going to evolve in light of the implementation of new TLDs is also a question which will be touched, and there may be follow-ups discussions necessary about that. So we had, besides the meeting with Fadi, there were executive members of ICANN staff available, like Tarek Kamal, Sally Kostaden, and also we talked with the CFO about the financial budget. And Tarek Kamal gave us an overview about the horizon of the future, how ICANN is planning and dealing to deal with internet governance in light of the wicked outcomes and the effects which that may have on ICANN. So that was a broad overview about that. And then Sally Kostaden is planning on her table the stakeholder engagement and outreach things, and we were specifically discussing that with regards the stakeholder activities and plans about outreach. In this context, there was mentioned so-called MIG, MIG activities or projects from ICANN, which is probably put to the table. MIG means multi-stakeholder internet governance projects. So that is on the table, and it was not in detail outlined, but there are some activities of ICANN related to the internet governance and to the inclusion in those activities of the stakeholders. In the context of the fiscal year budget for 2014, we were discussing with the CFO the budget request process and our inputs, specific inputs related to the different stakeholder groups, which may be requested, may be necessary to meet the deadlines as well. And one specific item also which was specifically related to that, what the constituencies and the stakeholder groups request is the GNSO toolkit. So we discussed especially with our progress about those things and our request specific requirements. So at the end of the 2 days in LA, we had the opportunity, since there was a board meeting planned going on the next days, and some board members already were available that evening. So we had also an hour with, or 90 minutes with Steve Crocker and some of the board members. Just going very to a tour d'horizon. And specifically, what I have in mind, it was interesting because Steve made very clear what is going about. Hello? What is going about the who is process? Well, because there was some confusion about the who is, what is going with that there is a who is project on the one hand, but on the other hand, there was the who is review team and what is going on with the recommendations of the outcome of the who is review team. And it was very clear that these are two activities who are going to be dealt with in parallel. So on the one hand, the who is recommendations as they stand, they are fully there will be Coward and there will be Delvis, and on the other hand, there is this project which is set up and which we have to bring input as well to that. So just summing up to that, what was the specific advantage of that meeting was clearly to our house was we had a meeting very close at the staff site, so that gave us the opportunity as well to have staff to specific points on the spot available. So we had discussions also between constituency level with staff members and on the stakeholder groups level separately with staff members. So that was a very big advantage to that. And last but not least, as I mentioned at the beginning, there was some interaction within the house, which is not normally going on, and that helped as well a lot. So that is summarizes.
Thank you very much, Wolf. Ulrich, it's Jonathan speaking. That's a useful summary. I wonder if anyone has got any questions or issues they'd like to raise about that now or take online. But it sounds like a comprehensive meeting, and you've done a good job of summarizing it, so thank you. Any comments or questions now for Wolf, Ulrich, or indeed for Mason on the previous topic before we get on to the next substantial item? Okay, thank you again, both. We'll take the action, Glenn, to summarize the work done in Amsterdam, and we'll work on either putting the action items out to the group and or on the action list to the extent that that's appropriate. Right, so moving on to the next item on our agenda, which is an item that we've been working on already for some time, and the deadline that Fadi provided us on this item 5, which is responding to his request for input on the work that was done on the trademark clearinghouse straw man. Could everyone please make sure their microphones are on mute if you're not talking or haven't been asked? There's a little bit of background interference coming in every so often. So I think on this item 5, the trademark clearinghouse straw man, Mason has been leading the discussion with a small group. And as you are all aware, there is a draft in circulation. And in fact, there are also some questions that have been asked on lists. I didn't have the opportunity to follow up on Jeff's question in particular, which related to a perceived or actual inconsistency between the statements that Fadi made in Amsterdam and in LA, and that is causing some challenges. But I did manage to talk to Sally Costerton this morning, who's on my time zone, so I'll give you an update once Mason's brought us up to speed. So Mason, if you could bring us up to speed with where we're at on the draft, and then I'll make a quick comment, and then we'll take it open to discussion.
Sure. Thank you, Jonathan. Mason speaking. This will be very brief. The initial draft of the letter was circulated to the council on December 28th. I know there was some discussion on the list about the content of the letter. There have been a couple of changes made to it. I circulated those changes back in a second draft earlier this week. I believe the status as it currently exists is there is general agreement on the content and voice of the letter, except on the part of the IPC and the BC. And I've been talking a bit with Brian, who's part of the drafting team for the letter, who I believe is planning to provide some input on that very shortly. My view is to get this off the council's desk and into Fadi's hands by next week, if that's possible. That's pretty much the update for you.
Thanks, Mason. I'm supportive of that time frame, and I'll do what I can to help with I don't want to use the wrong word here, but assisting in refining the final draft, since, as previously with the GAC letter, it's ultimately going to come with my name on it. So let's get it as far as we can, and we'll, I'll work with you and the drafting team on this, the group, to finalize it. Just to update you on, I mean, Jeff put a couple of questions on, and I think I've got these right, Jeff. I mean, one was about the inconsistency of the message, or either actual or perceived inconsistency of the message, and the other was, I guess, more broadly on one of operational readiness, which included, but touched on the information around the trademark clearinghouse. As I say, I wasn't able to talk to Fadi because of time zone issues, because there was no, I mean, Marika did put helpfully the transcript from LA onto our mailing list, but that then prompted your question, Jeff, as to whether these were consistent. I understand from Sally that Fadi has already, or it will imminently be putting out some form of, I think, video blog, rather than just a written blog, clarifying and reconciling the position between Amsterdam and LA, and will also in that same piece of work deal with further issues on operational readiness. So I got some form of update from Sally, because clearly this is in part at least a communications issue, so I wanted to try and nudge the council along in that respect. So hopefully what we will have shortly, within 24 or 48 hours after this call, is Fadi's view on reconciling the apparent difference between those positions. So that's the update I have. And over to you, Brian, whose hand is up on in the chat, in the Adobe one.
Certainly. thank you, Jonathan. I want to thank you and thank Mason for the work done so far on this draft letter. I just definitely wanted to build a little bit on what Mason mentioned. We were talking on the chat earlier, and the IPC and I believe my colleagues in the BC continue to have some serious concerns about the letter, which I'm happy to go into detail on the list rather than taking up the rest of the meeting today, going into a lot of detail. But I just think a couple of the quick highlights. You know, the letter does seem to state that it is the view of the majority of the council, and we're not sure if that is really a fair statement, if the BC and the IPC and even the ISPC in its comments expressed some support to a more limited extent than the BC and the IPC for the proposals. So we're a little bit concerned about that language, and we're not sure if that's completely accurate. And ultimately, at the end of the day, we do think there are some inaccuracies in the current draft that we'd like to see addressed. That, again, I'll work on with Mason, and we'll look forward to doing that. But ultimately, if it remains substantially in the form it's in right now, I think the IPC and potentially, I hope I'm not speaking out of turn for my colleagues in the BC, would like to have some kind of minority statement or our own sort of version of a minority letter submitted along with this one in response to Fadi.
Thank you, Brian. John?
I don't really – I suspect that the BC will have more to say, but I think it's pretty clear based upon what it already has said, what its view is. Mason has been gracious enough to discuss a couple of changes, I think, that would, for the purpose of this letter, be adequate for the BC. We may choose to we will continue to speak publicly and on the matter, and whether we resolve everything to our satisfaction now or somewhere down the road, we will continue to work at it.
Thanks, John. Alan?
Thank you. I'm pleased to see this letter going forward, but I'm a bit perturbed that there's no other action on the substance of the issues going on. At the end of the last meeting, I thought there was general agreement, not a motion, but general agreement, that at least on the issue that even staff says is policy, the GNSO should be initiating some sort of action, not necessarily a PDP, but something. And from the ALAC's point of view, even the other items where the majority of council believes that there are policy issues, that something would start going because time is flowing. So I really would like to see some action out of council, not only writing letters. Thank you.
Mason, do you want to respond directly to that or in addition to that?
No, I had my hand up on the issue of the letter. So I'll comment on that if I may.
So I just had a thought with Alan. Alan, maybe you could respond directly to this, but if indeed the action that gets taken, notwithstanding any input from the council, I'm just wondering how we reconcile the council taking action with if any action taken by staff proceeds along a certain path, and our work on what we perceive to be policy may become redundant in that. So I'm wondering if there's a sequencing issue here, not disagreeing with you that there may be substantial work that the council could undertake. Maybe you could comment on that.
Yes, certainly on the issues which staff deemed to be implementation, there's that question. On one of the items, the enhanced protections, I believe even the staff straw man acknowledged that it was policy. So, you know, at least on that one, I would have liked to see some at least discussion of what methods are going to be used to go forward. Is it a really, does it require a PDP? Can one of the other, decision-making processes suffice? So, but you're right. On the ones where we don't know if staff is going to ultimately pass judgment and the board saying, no, this is implementation, we're going ahead with it, that it may be premature on. But certainly on the ones that everyone thinks, everyone agrees, not necessarily the IPC and the BC, but staff and the majority of council agree is policy, I would have at least liked to see a discussion on how, what the options are for going forward if not initiating something. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. My immediate thought is that we close off the letter, complete our response then, and pick up these points you've made. That would be my thought. Mason?
Yeah, just on the subject of the letter very quickly. So I want to be clear that when the draft says that the majority of the council supports these points, I believe that's an accurate reflection based on comments and discussions that I personally had when drafting the letter, but I do want to make sure that those statements are accurate. So if there are issues or concerns about support for particular issues or the way that the letter is crafted in discussion of any issues, then I want to hear from counselors so that when we do communicate to FADI, that the letter is accurate.
That's a good point. Thanks, Mason. So please, everyone, I know the drafting team is a smaller group, which is a more efficient way of working on it, but if councillors do have concerns, especially with particular fine details on any of the sub-points within the letter, please make it known, support or not, as the case may be, if you haven't already. I mean, I think Mason's attempted to distill that from previous comments, so there's no need to repeat items that have been put on list already, but if you haven't made your voice known, in particular if you have a strong feeling in either direction, it would be useful to know. But in any event, support or lack of it is helpful in trying to form what is either consensus or majority or similar positions. I've got John, Thomas, and Jeff, and I've got nominally 5 minutes more on this topic, so let's hear from John, Thomas, and Jeff in that order.
Hey, Jonathan, this is John Berard. I think from the BC perspective, there's no doubt that a majority of the council feels this way. It's probably not a point to be belabored.
Thanks, John. Thomas.
Thanks, Jonathan. To me, the question is whether there are factual inconsistencies or inaccuracies in that letter. Brian made a statement earlier that there were
inaccuracies in there. And since some communication must have gone on between Mason and Brian, maybe Brian or Mason could enlighten us on that. I have seen one point made by John that Mason was willing to smoothen out in the draft, but otherwise I think it would be appropriate for the council to move on with that letter and allow for a minority statement or indicate that a separate statement would be submitted. But I think that we are most likely not in a position to reach consensus on each and every point in the letter. So we need to accept there will be no unanimity on the points, send out the letter, and allow for the BC and IPC to make their own minority statements. Thank you.
Thanks, Thomas. And just before we go to Jeff, you know my view is to the extent that we can to form as consistent a position in the council, notwithstanding that, to then highlight on the letter that we write where there are differences of opinion, and only if we can't achieve forward movement with either of those to then offer the opportunity of an independent statement. But in so that's I think my view on what I'd like to achieve if possible. Jeff.
Thanks, Jonathan. I'm not sure how I'm going to say this, so, and it may not always come out the best way, but I'm just concerned, especially looking at Karen's response that she just posted a few hours ago on the council list. Actually, Marika posted it from Karen Lentz. And it's almost like it doesn't matter what we say in this letter. It's almost – I feel like the decision's already been made and it's already been moving forward, especially given the fact that the statement of work for the providers is supposed to be completed by the end of this month, which means that there have to be drafts already being circulated of the statement of work between the providers and ICANN. And I just have to say the lack of response that we get from ICANN on these issues and such generalities. I mean, if you look, there are some substantive questions that have been asked of ICANN on this issue. And all we get back is the current status of the strawman model is that the comment period is closed. There was significant interest. Of course, that doesn't say anything. In these proposals, we are reviewing feedback to determine whether some, any, or all of these parts of the proposal should be implemented. I think we're owed a little bit more explanation and a little bit more detail than what we as the council get, since we're the ones that are responsible for policy development. But I feel like we are very reactionary. We're very late. And it's almost irrelevant what we say, because even the people that are making those decisions aren't necessarily on this call. So I'm just hugely disappointed at the way this is proceeding. I feel like it doesn't matter what we say in this letter. I support sending a letter, but it's just the whole process has been very disappointing from beginning to end. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks, Jeff. When you say we are reactive and delayed, I mean, I think we have met the timetables as a council that are requested of us. It may be that the your concern about the relevance of our response remains valid, but I just want to be clear that we haven't missed any deadlines or timings requested of us. It's not as though we are behind the curve in that context.
Yeah, if I can just respond, it's more the relevance coupled with the fact that it is now February 14th, the first TLDs are supposed to be approved in a couple months. The other thing is that, you know, look, we haven't heard from ICANN on the Trademark Clearinghouse technical list since December, and so the technical specifications have not been circulated on any of this stuff. They are months behind on that. It's very frustrating on every single level. So thanks.
Well, I've got Margie's hand up in the Adobe, so let me hand over to Margie. And then I'd like
Jonathan,
to
this is Zahid. Jonathan, this is Zahid. I'm not on the Adobe. Can I get in the queue, please? Thanks.
Yeah, we'll take Margie and then Zahid, and then I'd like to wrap this item up if we can, given the time constraints.
Jonathan, actually, I raised my hand for Karen Lentz, who's on but not in Adobe Connect. So, Karen?
Yep. Thank you, Margie. I just wanted to respond to the last couple of points about the letter. And you know, whether it has any impact as decisions have already been made. Decisions haven't already been made. You know, we have been pretty actively in the last week looking at the comments. We also are expecting, you know, we're aware of the discussions in the council around the letter, and we're expecting that guidance as well. Someone asked earlier about what happens if, you know, the council does decide to do policy work on some of these items. I mean, that's definitely something that we would want to know about in advance of being able to make a determination on where we are on the straw man. Thanks.
Thanks, Karen. I had Zahid next.
Thank you, Jonathan. I understand Jeff's point that, you know, there's time that's going by. I just wanted to make maybe a request, but also a statement before that. You know, the discussion on what the letter may include and what sort of red lines may sort of be acceptable, et cetera, has started only a few days ago, if my recollection is incorrect. I know we had lots of time before that, but this discussion sort of hasn't had, I think, as much time. So my request is that if we had a few more days, maybe between Mason and Brian and others, maybe we could achieve something. So it's really a request. I understand that, you know, 14th February was mentioned by Jeff. I appreciate that, and I understand that, you know, the process is sort of lagging as a result. But if we had a few more days, I hope, and I think, I heard Mason's summary earlier, you know, appreciation for the fact that, you know, even having meetings outside the processes of regular ICANN meetings is something now that everybody is beginning to realize has value. I would urge that if we had a few more days, maybe there's something we come up with. Of course, if we can't within maybe a week or so, or maybe some sort of timeline, respond and agree on things, I think I understand that it would be a majority view to send the letter. But I think a few more days may give us an opportunity. Just want to make that request. Thank you.
Thanks, Zahid. On the deadline, Fadi originally asked for a response no later than 28th of January, after 28th of February. We are now on the 14th of February. I think it seems sensible to me to impose our own deadline of a week to pull this together. There seems to be a strongish view in the council that we should send this off sooner rather than later. Notwithstanding that, I completely take your point, and you know it's my view that if we can take a little more time to reach as close to a common view, it may not be a consensus, but a common view of the content of the letter, that's desirable. I think we should close the topic on the letter. I'm slightly concerned about the sort of circularity of the issue with respect to whether this is implementation or policy and whether staff acts ahead of the council acts ahead of staff. But let's, on the letter itself, I think if we can work towards a deadline of an internally imposed deadline of a week from now, we'll meet Fadi's deadline by a week, ahead of his deadline by his ultimate deadline by a week, and that seems like something I'd like to ask Mason, the drafting team, all the councillors, and myself to get behind.
Jonathan, I think this is reasonable to decide. Thank you.
Thanks very much, everyone. Thanks for the contributions on that. I think we should probably move on to the next item in the interest of keeping our agenda and moving through this. The next item is something which is newer on our agenda, unlike the previous item, and this item deals with a request from the board for the council, should it so wish, to provide advice. I'm jumping ahead. This is an update. I apologize. I was one item ahead. This is an update on the work being done. And what I thought was useful to do here was to get an update from Thomas Rickett on the work that's going on within the PDP working group on second level protection for certain IGO names and acronyms. And the reason for this is that the board did ask us for some form of response to a second question. They asked two questions, one of which had a deadline of the end of January and one of which had a deadline at the end of February. So in order to frame that written response that's required to the board, we need to understand where the work of the PDP is going. So that's why this item is structured as it is. And I will ask Thomas to introduce the item, the work on the of the working group, and potentially discuss our response to the board, and then we can take any council comment on that.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. This is Thomas speaking, and my statement, which will hopefully will be brief, will be consisting of two aspects, one of which is to provide an update to the council on the work that's going on in the PDP, and then secondly, to provide an update on the discussion regarding the upcoming February 28th deadline. Let me start by saying that the working group is working extremely hard to get the work done that we've been tasked with. We have weekly conference calls that take 2 hours each, and we also have a vivid discussion on the mailing list and other substantive work going on in the background. As you will remember from previous updates, we have sliced the work into work packages. Usually, if time would permit, one would work on these work packages sequentially, but actually, since there are since we are under severe time pressure, we have chosen to work on those areas in parallel, and we have created subgroups to be to work on these specific issues. It turned out that the deeper we dived into the various questions, the more additional questions came up, and it also turned out that the subgroups, with a few exemptions, I must say, and I will get to the exemptions in a moment, did not seem to be able to come up with a group view on the various aspects in question. What we did accomplish, though, and I would like to highlight that, is that we now have quite a complete collection of the pros and cons and the various positions that are represented in the community on the subject matter. As you can imagine, for me as a working group chair and also for the council, it would make our work much easier and quicker to deal with if the group had already reached consensus on the very question. But I guess that at least it's very good to see now that we have a very robust foundation to base our discussion on. If I remember correctly, it was the aim of the council tasking the working group to deal with these questions, to answer the question of special protections once and for all. And I think that as all these this information that we now collected will go into report, I think our policy response will be very comprehensive and robust. So what are the issues that we're grappling with? I would like to highlight three areas, the first of which is that there are some in the working group that wish to see evidence of harm to those that are now requesting protections because they would like to better understand where the problem is that needs to be fixed. And one might say that, you know, I'm certainly paraphrasing, that they are of the opinion that if there is no problem, that no policy response is required to fix it. And if there is a problem, they would like to understand the size of the problem and the nature of the problem to create adequate responses to it, and because there are certainly different responses that one could think of, starting with blocking of certain registrations. We could only have notifications that are similar to the trademark claims notices, and there might also be other processes that one might develop. Now, in order to fence that in, ICANNstuff has carried out a survey on existing domain registrations in 30 TLDs because certainly we can't predict the future and predict precisely whether there's going to be harm or not, but the group has chosen that the best we have is information that we have on existing registrations and existing harm scenarios or threat scenarios. So we took a look at that, and this was received very warmly by the group. The issue, though, is that there are also folks in the working group, participants in the working group, that are of the opinion that certain designations need to be protected per se, and that there is no need to evidence harm because treaties or national laws actually do provide the protection that that they seek, and they just ask ICANN to implement those protections. And from this you can easily derive that we're facing a challenge of those that want to see certain information before granting protections or considering protections, and there are others that are unwilling, if not reluctant, to provide that information. The question beneath that is whether there is actually a legal foundation that would require ICANN to implement certain protections. And in order to get that question answered, we have sent a question to the ICANN General Counsel to establish for us whether ICANN is aware of any jurisdiction in which a statute, treaty, or other applicable law prohibits either both of the following actions by or under the authority of ICANN, and that would be A, the assignment by ICANN at the top level, or B, the registration by a registry or a registrar accredited by ICANN of a domain name requested by any party at the second level, the name of acronym of an intergovernmental organization, IGO, or an international non-governmental organization receiving protections under treaties and statutes under multiple jurisdictions. And if that that answer by General Counsel would be positive, then actually it would be more a matter for ICANN compliance to ensure that such registrations or applications for the top level would not occur, rather than a policy matter. Unfortunately, we're waiting for a response from General Counsel for a couple of months now, and we surely need that response rather sooner than later in order to overcome these hurdles in our discussions. We're also having debates on the potential qualification criteria for those organizations to be eligible to be protected, and the subgroup has actually worked out a list of a lot of criteria that could be used, but the group was not able to reach anything near consensus regarding that, which is why we're now in a situation where the most supporters would require treaty protection and multiple national laws protection, but there are even those who say that treaty protection would not be an adequate criterion, since most INGOs would fail to meet that criterion and therefore fall out of this scheme. And there are others who say that it must be treaty protection or multiple national laws. So there are many unknowns at the moment. We have made progress in the area of defining what potential protection mechanisms might look like. And I guess there is more or less unanimity with statements such as that the problems that we're now facing are primarily stemming from the fact that the RPMs, as we know them now, are reactive or curative, while these organizations that are now requesting protection are looking for proactive protection mechanisms. That's the first fundamental issue that we're dealing with. The second issue is that current RPMs, and you will remember that those who do not wish to grant extra protections say the organizations in question should be using the existing and upcoming RPMs, but in fact, since some of the requesting parties do not have trademarks, they wouldn't even be able to use those existing and upcoming RPMs. There seems to be quite some common ground in the group that that we might recommend that the existing and upcoming RPMs might be opened so that all beneficiaries of these protections that we're currently discussing and that potentially come into existence can use the new RPMs, so that they could use these curative or reactive reactions in cases where identical strings are taken by unlawful or by illegitimate registrations by third parties, or even for similar strings. So that's the good news. There's also some common ground in that the reserved names list, as it's currently being deployed by ICANN, would not be the appropriate tool. Those who have read communication by various organizations requesting protection, including the board and the GAC at times, have spoken of the reserved names list. But the problem with the reserved names list is that even the organizations entitled to certain designations would not be able to use them unless they go through a quite cumbersome RCEP procedure. So what we're looking at is some sort of a modified reserved names list or some other tool, and there's one approach that seems to have a considerable number of supporters in the working group that is in favor of using something parallel or at least close to what we now know as the Trademark Clearinghouse. Not to copy it, because the Trademark Clearinghouse is clearly primarily for the purpose of trademarks, but the idea is to have something that consists of two elements, one of which is a central repository where eligible strings can be entered by eligible parties after a vetting process, and then to add services on top of that that could be used by registries and registrars. We are now in the process of further defining what such processes could look like and what the remedies would be, whether it would be blocking or whether it would be a certain type of notice, but so that registrations could move forward, or whether some other special treatment would be given to those registration requests. There also is considerable common ground that exemption procedures are needed so that the protection mechanisms that we might come up with as a recommendation would only prohibit unauthorized third-party use, but that legitimate registrations by third parties would still be possible. The complexities is a level of complexity that has recently been added to our discussions is that some participants of the working group have understood our charter not only to be confined to organizations' names and acronyms, but that they also perceive it to include similar strings, both at the top as well as the second level. So there is a request to protect certain names at the top level, to open these strings up to a string similarity review, but then also to prohibit unlawful third-party registrations at the second level. And if you take that and digest that for a moment, that would actually open our discussion to deal with not only exact match strings, but also strings that contain the exact match, for example, in the format of keyword plus exact match or exact match plus keyword, and even strings that consist of or contain a variation of the exact match. That would mean that a typo name of an organization that could get protections itself would need to undergo special treatment as well as strings that contain typo variations or other variations of the organization's names or acronyms. So that makes our discussion more and more complex, and we also need to deal with contention sets of eligible parties with legitimate third parties. I think I'm going to leave it at that. What would really be great for the group is to see a response from General Counsel in the very near future, because we get back to the point that those requesting or some of those requesting protections just insist on the legal protection itself being sufficient to approve protections, while others in the group think that this is not the case. With respect to the February 28th deadline, as Jonathan pointed out, there was a comparable or potentially at the end of January where the GNSO Council was asked whether there were any concerns with respect to the global public interest or the security and stability. of the DNS. And in that case, since the council on the 20th of December has actually made its decision on the IOC and RCRC names, including the temporary protections, this question was sufficiently answered. And my idea was, or my thought was that since this this resolution has been made in the absence of a full community consultation through the PDP, and since the GNSO Council obviously has provided implicitly a statement to the board that there were no such concerns pending the outcome of the PDP, I would have proposed that we give the February 28th deadline the same treatment insofar as that we state that community the community work is still going on and that we will only know by the end of the PDP whether there are such concerns. When we discussed this issue during yesterday's working group call, there were statements made, though, that advised that the council should deal with this in a different way, i.e., not just say that that we're going to deal with this as we did with the January 31st deadline. And the points that were made there were that rule, there is a rule of PDP within ICANN, and that we might say that we're in the midst of a process at this moment, and that it would be against the public interest for the board to create new expectations of entitlements to protections before such time that either the working group finishes its work or the issue was actually pressing, which could be the case, for example, if the launch of a new GTLD was actually in front of our doors. And since there is still a couple of months' time, the recommendation was that the GNSL Council could say that in the public interest we would be working, continuing our work on this, and that there is no need for an emergency decision, and that we would keep the board updated on the progress that we made.
Can you hear
Thank you for that.
Thanks, Thomas. That's pretty comprehensive. I know some councillors will feel that's a lot of information, and especially on what is a very tight schedule, which is now tighter for our call. I mean, the essence of this is one, that there's thorough and comprehensive and quite challenging work being done within the working group, and two, that we do need to respond to the board, and there's a nexus point around that response as to whether we say we are successfully getting on with it and we accept the short-term reservation of these names, or indeed whether we challenge that in some way. So I think I've asked Thomas to prepare a draft response to the board for comment and input by the council, which I think he'll circulate. So Thomas will lead the initiative on this. Are there any comments on the response to the board in particular? I don't want to get dragged into a conversation on the work of the working group, but we do have a deadline to respond to the board. So you can make comment now, although in the interest of time, I'd like to take this draft on list as soon as possible. Any comments? I don't see any hands up. Would anyone like to comment or respond now, or would you like to see Thomas's draft? I'll assume you want to see the draft of the letter to the board and be aware of this issue. The real nub of it is a view on whether the names are given temporary protection in advance of the PDP outcome or not. Have I phrased that accurately, Thomas?
I was already on mute. Yes, you did. Thank you.
Thank you very much. See no hands in the chat, and I'm given the time pressures on the call, I'm going to move us on then.
Jonathan, I think just David, if I could just speak very briefly.
David, please do.
I just really briefly want to say, I just like to state at this point that I'm not particularly in. I certainly would feel that the case for preliminary reserving of names seems a bit premature to me. So that's pretty much all I wanted to say.
Thanks, David. Well, let's get that out in the chat, because there's two bases on which you might say that, and you might say it, one, that it's premature given where we are in the new GTLD timetable, and if GTLDs were to launch tomorrow, it would not be premature, and two, it's premature in advance of the outcome of the PDP, and there's clearly a difference between those two, and we'll have to make sure we air that properly when we prior to responding to
absolutely,
the
board. But I don't think we've yet made the case that there's likely to be a particularly strong reservation for those names in the first place. Particularly, I think we are going to end up with names. I mean, some of these names we are inclined to think that these are things like UNICEF or something, which aren't likely to be applying to anyone else. But there actually are a few that are going to be clash with other users. I mean, the obvious one that comes to mind is the World Health Organization. We can't do it. We're not going to be in a process where we're going to solicit the World Health Organization reserve all users of the word WHO. So we're not going to, you know, it's going to be complicated.
Understood. All right. Well, let's as I say, not get too much into that detail now, but we
absolutely
do need a response, and I appreciate your input on that. All right, I'm going to move us on then to the next item, which is a new item, and that's the issue of closed generic TLDs. Now, here the board, this is an interesting example of where the board is seeking a form of policy advice on a relatively, if not very short timetable for the council. And to my mind, there's really a couple of issues it throws up, but I did ask Marika to give us a brief update as to the background on this, and then I think we can have some discussion. So let me see if Marika, you or any other member of staff is available to just briefly set the scene.
This is Marika. We actually have Karen Lentz on that will provide that update.
Thanks, Marika.
Can you hear me, Jonathan?
Yes, Karen.
Okay, thank you. I will give just a short introduction on this topic. As Jonathan noted, the GNSO was requested to provide policy guidance on this topic if it wishes to provide that. And then simultaneously, there is a public comment period open now on this topic. These two actions stem from a resolution that was passed by the new GTLD program committee of the board earlier this month. The committee looked at this issue because of comments and concerns that were being expressed. There were some discussion about this at the Toronto meeting in the public forum, and there's been subsequent people and groups expressing concern or asking questions about this. And some of those were suggesting that ICANN should look at adopting new types of rules or using the code of conduct exemption in the registry agreement to try to enforce or address some of what was being expressed as a concern. A lot of this this topic and the request for input on it really goes to definitions. One of the kind of frequently asked questions that we've had about this is, well, can you tell me which applications these are that are affected here? So there have been, people who are commenting on this, some of them have identified certain applications that they deemed to be a concern, and those vary a little bit. There may be some of the examples given were an industry sector or some string that seems to be targeting a broad base, and then closed in the sense that the applicant is seen to be trying to use a generic term for its own benefit. So in terms of how to define both of those aspects, the closed and what's closed and what's generic, there really isn't a standard definition that everybody is working with. And so that's one of the points that was highlighted in the comments, the extent that there is a concern or an issue that's that's being addressed. How do we frame that, and how do we set parameters around that? The policy recommendations for the new GTLD program don't have, you know, don't speak specifically to this issue, and so the committee considered it important to understand the concerns that were being expressed. Some of them were expressing that in terms of impact on competition or public interest concerns, and so the committee did express in its rationale that it wanted to have a deeper background on this and an understanding of the views and concerns before taking any decision. And so the committee will consider the input from the GNSO if it chooses to give some, as well as the comments and the additional analysis that's directed in the resolution. I will turn it back over to you, Jonathan. I have I neglected to mention that I believe Chris Despain is on the call as well. Chris helped was involved in managing this issue through the committee, so be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Karen. And yes, I understand Chris is on the call and may well turn it over to him in a moment. I really wanted to flag one particular point, and this is that the request for the council's input goes parallel with the public comment, and I think that the board has respectfully recognized that this may be challenging for the council to comment on, or that there are limitations to what the council can do given its existing processes and the timeframes. And so I'd just make council note that it is, if the GNSO wishes to respond, we have the opportunity to respond. We've been extended the courtesy to respond, but don't necessarily have to. So, Chris, I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to add. I appreciate you've been on the call for an hour and a half now, and if there's anything that you would like to add in addition to what Karen said before we open it up to a little more discussion and try and move this point forward.
Thanks, Jonathan. Only to say that it's been very interesting actually being on GNSO call, so thank you for the opportunity. And we understand that it's not always easy for the GNSO council to respond as a council to questions like this, but if there is a way of doing so, that would be helpful, and I'm really happy to answer any questions that anybody has. Thanks.
Thanks, Chris. I see Jeff's hand is up. One thing I would like to make is to ensure that we do think about whether this has been dealt with in any way in the past before, and perhaps that's something you're going to touch on anyway, Jeff, but let me not hog the mic and give you an opportunity to contribute here.
Thanks, Jonathan, and thanks, Chris, for being on the call. I think that's precisely what I want to address. This actually has been addressed before. Not in as detailed as the question is being posed now, but the GNSO way back when in 2008, before it passed its policy recommendations onto the board, actually did consider the issue of restricting TLDs in general. So the very first question that came up after the 2005 round, where they only allowed sponsored TLDs, the very first question the GNSO working groups considered and ultimately the council considered was whether you should require, and I know this is sort of the converse, but they considered whether you should continue to require only sponsored TLDs or closed TLDs, different type of closed TLDs, but closed TLDs to go forward. And the working groups on this issue, and I was in one of them, decided very specifically that, no, we did not want to control or limit in any way the innovation and ideas that could come forward from new TLD applicants to use TLDs, top-level domains, in a way that had not been done before. And any type of restriction would get in the way of that. So ultimately, although nobody had thought in those terms at that point in time of a brand or a closed brand, the decision was very clearly made by the GNSO, and I think we need to point to it, in its original policy that it was not the idea of the GNSO, nor should it be the responsibility of ICANN to restrict the use of TLDs in any manner. That was a clear policy decision. In addition, when the vertical integration debates were going on, it's interesting now that people say, well, nobody expected these types, nobody could have foreseen these types of applications, but it's just not true. In fact, in the vertical integration debates, we extensively talked about brands having open versus closed TLDs, and it was acknowledged that this was an acceptable consequence of the program. At that point in time, nobody brought up any issues except for the registry, registrar, distribution issues, but nobody brought up any issues of whether this should or shouldn't be allowed. Also, in many conversations with Kurt Pritz, in open public meetings, there were many references to brands applying for closed TLDs. Again, no discussion as to whether that was right or wrong, but it was an accepted fact. And in fact, I remember at several meetings I brought up, I asked specifically about the Kraft example, and they didn't apply, but I said, you know, what if Kraft applied for Dot Food and wanted it all by itself? And the answer from ICANN staff was always, yes, that's acceptable. Yes, that's acceptable. There's a value in precedent, and I think we need to stick to the precedent that we've set in the past. I think ICANN has, especially in the latest few weeks, has gone back on a number of things that we have precedent for, and I think that's got to stop. At some point, the board, the new program, new GTLD program committee needs to respect the value of precedent, needs to respect things going forward as initially planned, and not continue to reopen issues that were already considered. And I'm also not just pointing to the closed versus open debate, but the new TLD agreement where ICANN has reintroduced the notion of a unilateral right to amend, which was in the first three drafts of the guidebook in 2009 and 2010. We formed a legal working group of members of the community and ICANN staff and board members. We got rid of it in version 4 of the guidebook, and now 3 years later, 4 years later, it's back. These things have to stop. At some point, enough is enough. We have to move forward. We can't continue to reopen debates. And so, again, without the commenting on the substance, the GNSO doesn't have to say whether we like open or closed, but we do need to make the point that this issue was considered already. So thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. I think that's very clear. Your position is that we as a council should respond. I'm hearing you say we should respond, and that we should respond on the principle of reopening a discussion which you believe has been dealt with via the policy-making process previously and therefore should not be reopened. And that should be a key point in the council's response. Chris, is your hand still up, and would you like to make a point?
Yes, thank you, Jonathan. My hand's up for precisely responding to Jeff, so thank you. Jeff, thanks. I appreciate what you're saying. There is a point in the request for comment that specifically asks about history, and I think that that's something that the council can usefully respond to, which is to set out, you know, what the history is. The only point that I would make is that I don't know what the answer to this is, but it's worth you responding clearly, if the council can responding clearly. There's a difference between it wasn't discussed and it was discussed and decided specifically not to prohibit, or it was discussed and no consensus was reached. And I think what the board is looking for right now is a clear, if we can get it, is a clear understanding of the history of it. And if you can provide, if the council can provide that, that's very valuable. If you can say, you know, it was discussed at this point and examples were given and there was consensus that there shouldn't be a distinction made, then that's very helpful.
Thanks, Chris. That's clear. So I'm hearing a single proposal from Jeff at this stage that we respond in a certain way. We do respond. We respond in a certain way, which has been described, and that so Jeff, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I do, and I think that's helpful, Chris. It is admittedly kind of hard to go back, 2006, 2007 archives and try to find specific examples. And again, this specific issue, closed versus open brand TLDs, was not discussed at that point in time, but the general notion of not restricting the use of TLDs, and some people had called them boutique TLDs at that point in time, that was specifically discussed. And then, as Volker has pointed out on Adobe, we called them single registrant, single user TLDs during the vertical integration working group. I think we could talk in generalities. We could talk some specifics, but you know, it would obviously be a huge burden for us to individually go back and look through transcripts and other things, other than having people from those groups, you know, step up and say, "Oh yeah, I remember talking about these types of issues." I think we can do that. But again, sometimes it's hard because you now have people that may have been for it, but now are against it because of certain competition arguments or needs. But we'll do our best. But yes, that's my proposal, Jonathan, is to go basically without commenting whether closed versus open are good or bad, but more in terms of that we did talk about the issue in general of restricting TLDs to certain types of uses, and that was outright rejected. So thanks.
I'm seeing three hands come up from David, Thomas Rickett, David Cake, Thomas Rickett, and Alan Greenberg. I'd like to close the discussion, the list at that point.
Hi, Jonathan. Could you put me in the queue? This is Ching. I'm not in the Adobe.
So please give me. That's David, Thomas, Alan, and Ching. Ching, since we haven't heard from you, why don't we hear from you first? And you may have well tried to put your hand up previously. So I'll put you ahead of the others, and then I've got David,
thanks,
Thomas, and Alan.
Thanks so much, Jonathan. And I would like to make it very briefly. I strongly echo what Jeff has said, and I think without knowing the background of this issue being revisited, I mean the closed generic issue being revisited, I think the board also or the new GTOD committee also may wish to provide a rationale why this specific issue be brought up again, instead of to revisit all the GNSO recommendations in the past, including several recommendations which is selectively not being implemented by the ICANN staff in the past. I would like to point out very specifically the IDN recommendation was not implemented as the GNSO, recommended in the year of 2008. So I think at this point, I mean, rather than really going to debate on whether we should do a closed string or a closed generic string, I mean the restricted string, we should maybe take a step backward from the board or the new GTLD committee, or at the step level tell us why this issue being selectively being revisited instead of all the recommendation being revisited. Just my two cents here. Thank you.
Thanks, Ching. Let's move rapidly on to David then.
Thanks, Jonathan. This certainly seems to be a very complicated issue. I've heard lots of arguments pro and con. Certainly, it's not one where NCSG has a unified view. But looking at some of the historical discussion, I have heard some people on the VI working group talking about that it was permitted, that closed GTLDs were certainly permitted, but that there were qualifiers on that. For example, that there may be mentions of public interest concerns and so on. So I don't think it's as straightforward an issue as permitted or not. But certainly it does look like, I think, Jeff's general idea of going carefully through the history and it's saying that we have already addressed this question and making it clear what the decision was is a sound one.
Thanks, David. Thomas.
Thanks, Jonathan. I think that there are two aspects to this question, one of which is certainly the history and past discussions or the outcome of past discussions in the GNSO. But we can point to that, and we should point to that, but to me the fundamental question is whether the Council sees the need to revisit its former views. Certainly nothing keeps the Council away, or the GNSO, away from considering these questions and working on them. But as far as I understand, and I've spoken to representatives of various groups inside the GNSO, I haven't heard anybody that wanted to reopen the book on that one. And so we might wish to add the result of maybe a test of waters on that to our response, which then would be twofold, one of which is would be hinting at the historical data, and two, saying something about the current view of the council. Thank you.
Thanks for that addition. I'm going to wrap this conversation up then with Alan, please.
Thank you very much. Both Jeff and Ching alluded to, I think, one of the critical issues here, that yes, a number of these issues were discussed and perhaps even decided by GNSO groups, but the real decisions ended up being made by staff following each of the applicant guidebook discussions and even prior to that. So, you know, the question of is dot food okay? Sure it is. That was a staff decision, which essentially, presumably, evaluated these things with great detail. And the board may well want to go back to the staff records of why did the final outcome end up like it was, because in many cases, the GNSO recommendations were not definitive, and in some cases, as Ching alluded to, strong recommendations were not followed as a matter of implementation. So it's not really just a question of what did the GNSO say. It's how did these decisions get made despite discussion in the community, and discussion which not everyone agreed to. There's a good chance, I don't know what the outcome will be, that the ALAC will put in a statement, you know, saying a large part of the at-large community supports restrictions. And if we had ever had that discussion in substance, we probably would have said it earlier as well. Thank you.
Great. Well, I think that's been a quality discussion. It's quite clear that there is a public comment period open for groups and individuals to put their own input in. I feel we've got 3 points that have come out of that. We are going to need someone to lead on this. So I would like a volunteer either immediately in the chat to lead the drafting of this response, because it seems clear to me that we do have a willingness and a desire to make a response to this request. So I'd love a volunteer, and that can come on list or in the chat. And I'm going to then recognize that there's 15 minutes left on this call for which we have 3 or 4 items. I think the planning for Beijing is well underway, which is item 10, and I'm going to ask Mason to continue with that work together with staff and pick it up on list. I'm sure he can put a brief précis of where we're at and any questions. Item 8 is important. This is the policy versus implementation discussion, and this is going to be a substantial item on the agenda in Beijing, I suspect. And so the key question for the council really is, do we as a council want to respond in some way and in some substantive way ahead of the Beijing meeting? So I would like to ask if there's any input in and around this issue of the staff paper on policy versus implementation and what the council might do ahead of that. By the way, on the previous item, I should have emphasized that in these fast-track processes and questions where the council asks for policy advice, I'm just to remind councillors in as so far as it is possible to relay these back to your respective groups and get your group input on this as effectively as possible. So that was a point I neglected to make on the previous item. Coming back onto this policy versus implementation, are there any comments as to how the council might respond or provide input to the public comment or otherwise ahead of Beijing? Marika, I know David, you have your hand up, but let's just hear from Marika and then over to you, David, after that. Marika.
Yeah, this is Enrique. I just need to note that there is currently a public comment forum open on this item. We need to encourage input on the staff paper and as well any other points of view in relation to this issue, with the idea being that the feedback received will feed into the session that we're planning for Beijing. And maybe also to note if there are any people interested in being part of organizing that session, please let me know. We already have a couple of names of people that said they were interested in putting a session together. The idea is really to make that a cross-community discussion on this issue and hopefully be able to identify some very concrete next steps that either can take place on a community-wide basis or also groups may identify steps or actions they want to take within their own communities to address some of the issues that we've encountered with this discussion.
Thanks, Marika. It's a good point. So Marika is looking for volunteers from within the council or the broader community to assist with planning and developing that session in Beijing. And in addition, there is an opportunity for us to potentially respond to this as a council. I'm just going to see if there's any other comment or input on this topic at this stage. Seeing none, I will move us on to the next item in the agenda then, which is the update that Barbara Roseman provided to us on the Who is Privacy and Proxy and Relay and Reveal study. This forms part of a substantial set of studies and other work that have gone on in the Who is, in and around the Who is process, Who is issue. One thing that I would like to have answered briefly in this discussion is, or at least raise a point, is how, given the commissioning of the Who is expert working group, how this links to other ongoing work in Who is. You may well be planning to touch on that in any event, Barbara, but I think it's something we should touch on if you don't. I know you've sent something to the list. Let me give you the opportunity to talk with the council now on where we're at with this topic.
All right. Thank you very much. This is following up from the Who is Study 4 survey results, and just to go over the findings of that, basically they determined that a full study of Who is Privacy and Proxy, Reveal and Relay could, if defined in such a way as to resolve the identified barriers of confidentiality and aggregated data and such, provide some but not all of the data that was anticipated by the GNSO Council, that this would be well received by people on all sides of the Who is information access debate, and that if attention was paid to the issues that arose during the study, that they think that this would produce very good data. Because there's the effort to sort of move forward on a privacy proxy accreditation process, the data that would come out of this survey could be very helpful for that process. It would look at the questions of how relay and reveal requests are handled by privacy and proxy providers. It would identify the current processes that they're using, and it would really just lay out the groundwork for what the existing set of circumstances are. It's debatable whether this is something that should move forward before the expert group has even commenced their work. However, you know, there was the recommendation by the board that any work that that could be done in parallel with that should not be halted just because the expert group had not yet started or completed their work. I think that the question raised for the council here is whether there's enough information that would be gained from moving forward with a privacy proxy reveal and relay survey that would
gather data about the existing state of things, whether the value of that outweighs just waiting until the expert group has had a chance to do some of their work and present some findings in Beijing. I think that either way, this is probably a study that is worth doing on some level. It's just a question of the timing of it that would be, I think, open for discussion.
Thanks, Barbara. Thank you for being so brief in getting to that. So that's really the essence of the question. There is a potential for this council commission study on the proxy privacy work. And the question is really, is this something which we should be getting on with anyway, as was planned, or should it be put? Should we be no longer doing this work, or should we tucking it in behind the work of the expert working group? I see I've got a hand up from John Berard and then Jeff Newman.
Jonathan, this is John Berard. The board resolution instructed FADI to do two things. One was to continue working to enforce the current who is requirements, and the second was to empanel an expert group to consider a directory services evolution. I would view the moving forward on this study as being helpful to continuing to deliver on the current who is environment. Certainly they are connected, but they are not sequential. And so I would say we should move forward.
Thanks, John. Jeff, your hand is up. Are there any points either in support of that approach or against it? Jeff, I'm not sure where you would like to come in on this. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. My answer is an I don't know. And the reason I don't know is it seems like ICANN has formed this expert group. And if this expert group is going to be working on this issue and going around the policy process, then I don't know. I don't know if it's worth it. It's a lot of money to spend on this. I think it's a worthwhile survey. But, again, the fact that now this expert group has been created, the fact that ICANN has now inserted a provision into the registry agreements that says, regardless of what the GNSO community thinks, if the expert working group comes up with recommendations and the expert working group and the board want to move forward with those recommendations, it gets automatically implemented against the registries and registrars ultimately. So, I'd like actually a meeting with FADI and the board on this very issue in Beijing before we decide to spend more money on these types of additional studies. I think the study is important. I think this work should be left to the GNSO and not to the expert working group. And if that's the case, then yes, move forward with it. If we're just going to be worked around anyway through the RAA and through the expert working group, then no, we should not waste our money on this. So, thanks.
Jeff, thanks. To be clear, that provision is proposed in the contract. It isn't yet agreed, right? That's a proposal that there's some form of adherence to the output of the working of the expert working group.
Right, which is precisely why we need the meeting with FADI and the board, especially the new GTLD program committee, to talk about this in Beijing.
All right, that sounds like an action item either at or ahead of Beijing. Does anyone else want to pick up on this? I see, Margie, you had your hand up, and I'll put you ahead of the queue in case there's material information that you're able
yes.
to provide in
and,
this respect.
And Alan also.
Yeah, Alan, sorry, I see you and your...
And Wendy, please.
Have your hands up, but I just want to hear from Margie so it informs potentially your point.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I just wanted to highlight that the board resolution talks about the expert group as feeding into the PDP process. So from the staff perspective, the preliminary issue report is currently being drafted and will be published likely before Beijing. And then, it would go through that process. So in terms of relevance to the PDP, it just seems that the outcome of the study might be useful when the PDP kicks off. And so I just wanted to clarify that.
So, Margie, your view is that the expert working group and potentially the study feed into the issue report and or the PDP?
Yes, that's correct. And that's how the preliminary issue report is being drafted, is to anticipate that the work would feed into the PDP.
All right. I've got we're on a tight time scale here. I've got Alan, Jeff, and you have dropped out. So I've got Alan and Jeff.
Okay, thank you. I part of what I was going to say was what Margie has said, is the board's resolution, the expert working group, is to feed into a PDP. We've also heard that the discussions in the RAA group on accrediting privacy and proxy services is likely to lead into a PDP. So unless we believe that the preliminary work done by the expert working group is likely to change the requirements for this study and change the specifications, I see no reason to delay it. Let's get the information. These studies take far longer than we ever expected. We're still waiting for results of studies that were commissioned years and years ago. Let's get it off. Let's get it going, unless we really believe that the specifications will change substantially.
Jeff, do you have something additional to add?
Yes, and in fact, so I hear what Margie said. I think that's great. I think if that's I know that's in the board resolution, but I will emphasize that is not in the proposed agreement. There is no mention of PDPs. There is no mention of that part of the board resolution. And in fact, in discussions with the registrars on the RAA, it's understanding that was not mentioned either. So, again, I will not be in favor of moving this study until we get that clarified, cleared up, and out of the registry agreements. Because, again, that's just a huge amount of money to waste. And I think having a discussion with the expert group before we approve the money to do this very expensive, I agree, a beneficial study, but not if it's just going to be worked around. So at this point, my response is absolutely not. Let's not move forward until we get complete clarification that this will indeed feed into a PDP and not directly into the agreement.
Well, I'm thinking, I'm hearing something that's not entirely inconsistent. We can both seek that clarity with the intention of moving ahead with the study pending the clarification that you are advocating, Jeff. So I see those things. It's not an either-or. I'm hearing an advocacy for moving ahead with the study but pending clarification on how these dots join with respect to the PDP and the study and so on. So
Because I don't know the budget here. I don't know what we're planning on spending. I'd like to know a little bit more before we just say, yes, go ahead and move the study. But I think this should be a topic in Beijing. I think by then we should hopefully have all the information we need, including the budget, including the commitments that it's not in the agreement, that it's going to go feed into PDPs. All of that stuff before we should definitively say yes, move forward.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff. I'm going to draw that topic to a close. I suspect that the budget information and the scope of the study is already available. If it is, Barbara, please send that to the list. If it's not, please clarify that we have not yet set a budget for this. But I have a feeling it may already be defined. In any event, I've heard... it sounds to me like there's a little bit of work to be done before we, as a council, agree to support the undertaking of that work. So we've got a little bit more to do on that. We've come to the final 2 minutes of the call, and I've skipped over the planning for Beijing, as I warned you I would earlier. Mason's going to update the list, and we'll pick up on that. I know Alan had a request to raise an item under any other business. If there is anyone else with an item they'd like to raise, under any other business, please go ahead and put your hand up in the queue after Alan. Alan.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to highlight the continued delays on implementing the Pedner PDP and the ERRP. It's now been close to 2 years since the GNSO approved the recommendations. It's been 14 months since the board approved it, and it's been over 2 months since the public comment period was closed. I'd like a report. I'd like to see a report to council from staff telling us just what's going to happen here. And a huge amount of community time was put into this, and it's just going on and on forever. Thank you.
Right. We're really going to have to wrap this up in the next minute or two. I've got an input from staff, from Marika, and then I've got Jeff and Maria in the queue, and I know Ching would like to say something. So I've got three counselors, and ahead of that, I've got Marika. Marika, Jeff, Maria, Ching.
Yeah, this is Marika. I can be brief just in response to Alan's question. I believe it's really close. I think it's the announcement on the implementation is coming in the next 2 weeks, but I'll relay your message to staff so they can provide an update to the council list on the status of implementation of PadMariner. I do feel your frustration.
Thanks, Marika. Jeff?
Yeah, I'll be very quick. Again, just a notion of sticking to precedent. I think that we should send a message and discuss it a little bit more in Beijing to the board, to the new GTLE program committee, of sticking to precedent, not reopening issues that were closed 4 years ago. And that includes the changes to the registry agreement, which includes things like a unilateral right for ICANN to amend the agreement, whether regardless of whether the community wants it or the registries want it. So I think we need to send that clear message that we can't just keep debating issues over and over again. Things need to be closed at some point in time. Thanks.
Maria.
Thanks, Jonathan. Quick update. Before Christmas, I made a complaint to the Ombudsman about the initiation and conduct of the Trademark Clearinghouse meetings and the lack of transparency around them. And I just wanted to update the Council with I had a meeting with FADI 2 weeks ago in Los Angeles during the non-contracted party house meetings. And I know he's shared some of this with people who are at that meeting as well. Essentially, he's kind of taken on board a lot of the points and wanted to work constructively to make sure that we don't make that sort of mistake again. So he invited me to help to develop some, articulate some of the community norms about how we run meetings transparently, and I want to do that in a pretty transparent way, so I've not quite figured out how to do that. Denise Michelle on staff is helping out, so I just wanted to put that to the Council. I will send a follow-up email. I would really greatly appreciate any input that anybody has to give, and that's really it.
Thanks, Maria. I'm sure we'll do that. Any complaint to the Ombudsman is obviously very serious, and Fadi, I suspect, has taken it seriously and hear from you that he has. So that's good to know that that's moving towards a resolution. Ching, did you have something more you'd like to say? I'm aware I perhaps didn't include you because you aren't evident on Adobe.
Thanks. I'll be quick. I mean, just on the budget issue, I've just heard of other fellow councillors talking about the budget issue for the expert group. We have similar, establishment for the expert group for the variant, the IDN variant QOD group, which also costs tremendous financial resources. So I would like to put this on the record for the budget for those expert working group versus the volunteer groups. How these two kind of methodology can be compared, and what would be the efficiency of the two groups? Just for the record, thank you.
Thanks, Ching. I'm very conscious of needing to bring this call to a close, but I'm also conscious that some haven't been able to raise their hands, and I'm aware that Wendy may be someone who unfortunately missed an opportunity to talk earlier. Wendy, do you still have something you'd like to contribute?
I just wanted to second Jeff's earlier call for discussion in Beijing about changes to agreements. I think that's a very important piece for us to get on our agenda for Council to discuss at the highest levels.
Thanks, Wendy. So this theme of precedent or prior agreement and not revisiting substantive issues that have been appear closed. All right, thanks everyone. We've more or less stuck to schedule. I appreciate the quality of the input, the tone of the input, and it seems to me that we're going to have to go through this audio with a fine tooth comb and pick out a number of actions. I'll work with staff and the other council leadership, Mason and Wolf Ulrich, to do that, and we'll try and represent that as accurately as possible on the action list and keep the ball rolling on these various items. Thank you very much for those of you who got up early, and for all of those of you who have paid attention and contributed very well. We'll be talking with you on list and again at the council meeting in approximately 1 month's time. Thanks again, everyone.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jonathan. Well done.
Bye.
Bye. Good night for everyone in the States.
Thank you. Goodbye.